It's Thursday morning, the 18th of June, after a few days where the loudest noise in this field came from boardrooms and balance sheets. Today, the center of gravity moves somewhere I find a good deal more interesting, out of the screen and into the physical world. The four stories I want to walk you through are all, in their own way, about machines reaching into the real. A chemistry bench, a stretch of airspace, the motion of objects, and the human body. Let me take them one at a time. First up is a result that I think is the most quietly important thing on the desk this morning. OpenAI, working with a company called Molecule.One, connected its GPT 5.4 model to an agentic chemistry system they call Maria. And Maria is wired into a real, high-throughput, automated laboratory. They gave the system an open-ended goal: take a useful but stubborn class of chemical reaction and make it work better. The model generated and ranked thousands of research proposals, and human chemists picked four of them to actually run. The one that paid off targeted something called Chanlam coupling, a reaction chemists use to form carbon-nitrogen bonds. There is a particular version of it, coupling primary sulfonamides with boronic acids, that has historically given low yields. That matters because sulfonamides show up in a wide range of medicines, from anti-cancer drugs to antibiotics. The model, on its own, singled out that hard substrate class as the high-value target and proposed that a mild oxidant, a compound called Tempo, might push the yields up. And here is where the automated lab earns its keep. Across two cycles of experiments, the system ran 10,080 reactions. That is more than a chemist running three reactions a day would get through in a decade. Under the optimized conditions, yields improved for 88% of the boronic acids and 83% of the sulfonamides they tested. The mean yield rose from 16.6% to 25.2%, and the fraction of reactions clearing 30% yield more than doubled. The system even found that Tempo could be swapped for a cheaper cousin with almost no loss. And critically, the result held up when human chemists repeated it by hand at normal bench scale. Higher yields in 11 of 14 cases, most of them more than doubling. Now, OpenAI is careful with the language here, and so am I. They call this near autonomous, not autonomous. Humans wrote the prompts that steered and graded the model, chose which ideas went into the lab, corrected the experimental plans, and ran the validation by hand. The whole thing took 3 months. But the part that stays with me is the shape of the loop. A model reviewed the literature, proposed a specific, surprising, testable idea, designed and read the experiments, and arrived at a finding that human chemists could reproduce. The caveats are real. It is one reaction, on specialized infrastructure, with no proof yet that it generalizes. But as a glimpse of an AI partner working alongside scientists at the bench, it is a striking one. Moving to the second story, which keeps us in the physical world but takes us into the sky. The United States Air Force has handed out the first production contracts for what it calls collaborative combat aircraft, uncrewed jets designed to fly alongside crewed fighters as a kind of robotic wingman. Two companies won the airframe contracts: General Atomics, a long-established maker of military drones, and Anduril, the software-first defense startup. They each beat out at least four other competitors, and the awards came in 4 months ahead of schedule. Together, they cover the first three production lots, and they put the service on a path to field at least 150 of these aircraft by the end of the decade. There is a second piece to the announcement that I find just as interesting as the airframes. The Air Force is running the autonomy software, the actual brain that flies the thing, as a separate competition. Three companies, Anduril, Shield AI, and Collins Aerospace, will move forward, and over the next year the service will evaluate their software and pick a primary provider in 2027. So the company that builds the body of the aircraft may not be the company that supplies its mind. Shield AI, which makes an autonomy stack called HiveMind, separately announced its own production contract for that mission. Autonomy software. I want to dwell on that split for a second because I think it is the real story, By keeping the autonomy layer separate from the airframe, the Air Force is treating the software as a swappable, contestable component, something it can keep improving or replace without being locked to whoever welded the metal. The program's acquisition executive described it as the service's first real instance of human-machine teaming in aviation at this scale. The aircraft are meant to fly with current fifth-generation fighters and the future F-47, extending their reach and their sensing, and they are built to be retrofitted as missions change. The engineering choice that I would point you to is that decoupling, keeping the brain separate from the body, so the brain can iterate on its own clock. Third up is a research release from the Allen Institute for AI, and it pairs beautifully with that first story about a model working in a lab. It is called Momo Motion, and it does something deceptively simple to describe. It forecasts motion. The team draws a sharp line between perceiving motion and predicting it. Modern models have gotten very good at watching a video and tracking how every point and object moved through it. But that is backward-looking. It explains motion that already happened. An enormous number of the systems we actually want to build need to look forward instead. A robot reaching for a cup has to anticipate how the cup will move before it ever touches it. A video generator has to know what motion comes next if the frames it produces are going to look physically real. So here is what Momo Motion takes in. A single image, a handful of three-dimensional points marked on an object, and a written instruction describing the intended action, something like move and rotate the wooden bowl with fruit on the table, and it predicts where those points will travel over the next few seconds in three-dimensional space. The Institute reports it does this substantially better than existing forecasting methods, and those predicted trajectories can feed straight into two very different applications: planning for a robot and trajectory condition video generation. Alongside the model, they released the dataset, and the dataset is really the engine here. They call it the Momo Motion 1 million video collection, three-dimensional point trajectories paired with action descriptions, drawn from 1.16 million videos. What I like about this is the framing. Motion forecasting becomes a language-conditioned, three-dimensional prediction problem. The written instruction is what tells the model which of many possible futures to predict, and that is exactly what lets the same scene serve both a robot's planner and a video generator. It is another step in a direction we keep seeing this week. Models that do not just describe the physical world, but try to anticipate it. And for our fourth and final story today, the strangest one, and maybe the most ambitious. Midjourney, the lab most people know for generating images from text, used a launch event to reveal something that has almost nothing to do with image generation, a full-body ultrasonic scanner. The founder, David Holtz, called it the first new whole-body medical imaging modality in 50 years. Instead of the radiation of a regular scan or the magnets of an MRI, it images the body with ultrasound. The engineering claims are genuinely big, something on the order of 358,000 ultrasonic elements arranged in a ring, the person immersed in water because sound travels through water far better than through air. Data pouring off at around 17 gigabytes a second, and a reconstruction that resolves internal tissue down to at about half a millimeter. Now, a few honest qualifications because they matter. This is a first-generation prototype. About a dozen people have been scanned so far, and each scan still takes around 20 minutes. And Holtz was upfront that the images shown so far do not even use AI yet, though the reconstruction is exactly the kind of hard inverse problem where learned denoising and interpretation are the obvious next layer. He framed the whole machine as infrastructure to give AI fast, rich, cheap data about the physical body. The business wrapping is the part that made everyone in the room sit up. The plan is to deploy these inside a 25,000-square-foot Midjourney spa near Union Square in San Francisco, with saunas, cold plunges, and 9 or 10 scanners, funded entirely out of the company's image generation revenue, with no outside investors and the eventual dream of a fleet of 50,000 machines. And then the skepticism, which I think you should hold on to. There were no sensitivity or specificity numbers, no disease detection benchmarks, no peer-reviewed validation. The resolution is still coarser than the established scanners. The water tank is an awkward thing to build a clinic around, and the distance between a striking full-body image and a safe, approved diagnostic product is the whole ballgame. The engineering demo is real. The medical case is not yet. So what was this morning actually about? Four very different stories. A reaction discovered at an automated bench. A fleet of robotic aircraft. A model that forecasts how objects move. And a machine that wants to image the body, the way you step, on a scale. The thread running through all of them is the same. The work I find most alive right now is not happening on a chat screen. It is reaching off the screen and into the physical world, into chemistry, into airspace, into the motion of real objects, into the body itself. The full digest has more than 30 other items waiting for you, a deep stack of reinforcement learning and world model papers among them. Until then, keep reading the papers, and I'll see you tomorrow.